At the time, you know, the Comedy Store was and is a really important center for comedy. You know, so many legendary comics like, you know, Roseanne Barr and like, David Letterman, you know, all got launched there. You know, Richard Pryor was a regular at the Comedy Store. But, you know, aside from a few people like Richard Pryor, like Paul Mooney, it was really tough to get on stage there as a black comedy, as a black comedian. A lot of people were very frustrated. They would wait in line for hours waiting for a chance to get their shot.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. That was Oscar-nominated director, producer Reginald Hudlin. And he has a really great docuseries out, Fat Tuesdays, which is about a iconic comedy showcase that happened every Tuesday night at the Comedy Store back in the 90s. That showcased this amazing black talent that was out there. And that is him talking about how there was no real opportunity for black comedians to really showcase their talents because pretty much it was all for the white comedians at the Comedy Store and other comedy clubs. So this is a really cool conversation that really gets down to the history of and rise of the great black comedy that's come out of the 90s and 2000s and so forth. So before we get to that, we had a heating system put in our place, and they put in a thermostat, and they didn't know how to operate the thermostat. The contractor's putting it in. It's one of these smart thermostats that can do all these things. And there's just, I've talked about this before on my show. There is zero customer service and just people don't care. And I'm going to shoot somebody, really. And I will get off, you know? So the guy puts the thermostat in and I said, well, you know, when you're done putting it in, I want you to, it'd be great. I'm excited to have you show me how to use it. He goes, yeah, you and me both. Never done one of these before. He's looking at the manual and he's on the phone with customer support for the thermostat. This is the contractor putting in like a $15,000 heating system. I said, okay. So he goes, look, I really don't know. He goes, I don't know how to, this is why I hate these things. This is why I like the regular thermostat. This is why I hate these things. He goes, you ordered it. I go, I didn't order it. The contractor ordered it. And so what if I did? It's none of your business who ordered it. Just show me how to use it. So he starts giving me pushback and I'm like, you're not leaving this house until you show me how to operate this thermostat so we have heat. It's going to be 12 degrees tonight. No, I don't know how to. We go back and forth and he's walking through it and he's learning at my expense. Okay. And he keeps saying, this is not how to do. You know what this is like? I said, this is like you go to Ford and you buy an F-150 truck. You spend $75,000 and, you know, normally a dealer would like sit there and show you the bells and whistles and this does this and this button does that. And instead they say to you, the guy goes, I don't know. I don't know. This is why I don't buy these trucks. They're too complicated. You got to call Ford and figure it out yourself. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. Okay. So he leaves. Guess what? We can't get the heat to work properly last night, and we couldn't get the schedule that we put in to work, so it didn't go on and go off when it was supposed to, so now I have to deal with it and call customer support, okay? So just live in the woods, okay? Light a fire every night. It's not worth it. It's just not worth even living in a house anymore, okay? Enjoy Reginald Hudlin. It's a really cool conversation. I'm going to go and punch my thermostat. See you next week. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. Very excited to have my guest on this week, Oscar and Emmy nominated producer and director, Reginald Hudlin, one of the most influential filmmakers of his generation. He's the director of such films as House Party, Boomerang Marshall, produced movies like Django Unchained, The Baby's Kids, and television shows like Friday Night Vibes with Tiffany Haddish and Boondocks. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah. Your latest project, Fat Tuesdays, the era of hip hop comedy, it's out on Prime Video and it tells the story of this all black comedy night at the Comedy Store in L.A., which ran from 1995 to 2005. And that night was created by a really great comedian, Guy Torrey, when he was very young in his career in L.A. I obviously want to talk about Fat Tuesdays, but it seems like in watching the series, so talk about Fat Tuesdays, you have to talk about Comedy Act Theater, which was founded by Robin Harris, who passed away in 1985 He was working at the Comedy Store, but like felt frustrated there and sort of found this space that became sort of the hub for the Black comedy scene in LA. Tell people a little bit about the Comedy Act Theater and why that was so important to the whole Black comedy scene, not just in LA, but in America.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, at the time, you know, the Comedy Store was and is a really important center for comedy. You know, so many legendary comics like, you know, Roseanne Barr and like, you know, David Letterman, you know, all got launched there. You know, Richard Pryor was a regular at the Comedy Store. But, you know, aside from a few people like Richard Pryor, like Paul Mooney, it was really tough to get on stage there as a Black comedy, as a Black comedian. A lot of people were very frustrated. They would wait in line for hours waiting for a chance to get their shot. So finally, Robin Harris, who's a genius of comedy, got fed up. And he started performing at a nightclub in South Central LA called the Comedy Act Theater. And the Comedy Act Theater became a place where, you know, Martin Lawrence, so many great comedians could go and work every night. Because the thing about comedians, like an athlete, you got to work out every night.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Out. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So
absolutely.
There are all these comedians who, you know, who started getting their shine because of the Comedy Act Theater. Two terrible things happened. Robin Harris, who I worked with on House Party, and then I did a movie in tribute to him called Bebe's Kids.
Yep.
Robin Harris, who was going to be a giant star, passed away, died of a heart attack. And that was really hurtful to the Comedy Store because he was really the anchor, the center of the show. The second terrible thing that happened was the LA riots. And when that happened, a lot of the agents and managers, the people who were looking to discover talent, wouldn't go down to South Central anymore because they were scared. So there needed to be a place where you could find, you know, those new comedic voices. So Guy Torre, who came from St. Louis, following the footsteps of his big brother Joe, was like, look, man, this won't do.
Right.
We got to find a place, you know, in mainstream Hollywood to shine our light. So he went to the Comedy Store, the number one place for comedy, and went to the management and said, hey, we need to do a Black night here. And, you know, so, you know, this is all, you know, Black comedians can get the shine on. So they said, fine, you can have Tuesday night. He's like, Tuesday night? Nobody's fine on Tuesday night. I
mean, right. Even the nobody goes to even the cockroaches don't go to the comedy clubs on Tuesday night.
Cockroaches at home on Tuesday night. So they say, look, take it or leave it. So he took it. And Guy did the impossible. He took turn Tuesday night at the Comedy Store to the hottest night in LA.
Can I just say so people know, like, what's so great about this series is the detail. You know, I'm a comedian. I'm based in New York, but I've worked in LA a lot. So, and Chappelle, who's a friend of mine, has talked about this era a lot, you know, just hanging out at the table, the Comedy Cellar, just, you know, shooting the shit, and how, like, he remembers seeing Guy Torre, and he talks about it in the series, and he's just saying, oh my God, this guy's like, he's destroying. I can't ever be as good as this. Like, this was like the epicenter of Black comedy in the world. But one of the things I love about Guy is, like, he's got 1 month in February to make this show work at the Comedy Store in the Belly Room, which is the smallest of the three rooms. And he's like grabbing anything he can. And he gets this guy, Cherry Popper, who tell people who Cherry Popper is, to help him with the shows.
When you first come to LA, you ain't got no money. You're sleeping on people's couches.
Right.
Even if you get a place, you got a bunch of roommates. So one of his roommates was this guy, Cherry Popper. Now, Guy was, you know, telling jokes for a living, but Cherry Popper was stripping. So Cherry Popper was it, you know, he was like, look, Cherry Popper, I need you to help out. So Cherry Popper, you know, trying to get the word out to get people to go. So he would hand out flyers at the strip club. So a lot of ladies, you know, would also go to the see comedy at the Fat Tuesdays because of Cherry Popper's hip skills doing other nights.
It's so great because it's really how these kind of things happen. Like, it's Guy Tori's vision and like determination to just make this happen. And what I'm trying to figure out is, I understand those two big events, Robin dying and the LA riots, scaring people. And somebody else, I can't remember who it is in the series, talks about like somebody, some white people in the industry, you know, I don't know, producers, casting directors, like wanting to go after the riots to see black comedy, but they were asking to get rides from the black comics so that they'd be safe.
Yeah, exactly. Can I ride with you? Can I leave when you leave? definitely. Like,
which was code for I ain't going nowhere near that as a white person alone. I need some bodyguards, right?
Exactly.
So what was it? What confused me about this time is the riots happened, and if ever the black voice needed to be heard in the comedy community, it was then. So why did that hurt the Comedy Act Theater? Why did black audiences stop going there? Or why wasn't there some place where they were going? Why did Guy have to make this night happen in the way like he had to? Hey, he had to build it from the ground up. I would have thought there'd be somewhere, be something after the riots.
Yeah, I mean, because Robin Harris passed away, already that had hurt the attendance of the Comedy Act Theater. Because, you know, Robin, you knew if you went to the Comedy Act Theater, you were going to see Robin. And Robin was going to, like, blow everybody away. And then you would also discover some people. So, but what's your anchor tenant? It's like a shopping mall.
Yeah. No,
you
yeah.
You can't lose your anchor tenant.
Right. You can't. Right. Right. You can't lose Bed Bath and Beyond. It's gonna hurt.
You can't lose it, man. Why are people coming? Right.
Right.
So
right.
It was already hurting by the time Guy Tori got there, because he got there, he's hanging out with his brother Joe. He had heard about the Comedy Act, and when he got there, he was like, "Hey, well, what happened?"
Right. Right.
And so it was already hurt, and then when the LA riots happened, that just kind of killed it. It was, right. You know, it was like economic downturn plus COVID.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, but the point is, you're right, that voice needed to be heard, and Guy found a new way of doing it in the right location. So kudos to Guy, who, you know, still, you know, fresh in the game, understood beyond, oh, am I working? He understood the game has to be changed, and he opened Fat Tuesday.
Well, you know, the thing that's great about the series is it's almost like should be required watching in school for kids, because it's about black history. It's about history in America. It's from through the lens of comedy and stand up comedy. But still, there are a lot of important sort of life lessons that need to be learned. And maybe I'm just naive and whatever, but like, you know, we're talking about late 1980s, early 1990s, not 1950. And you would think that there would have been more of a black comedy scene at that time, right? Like, once I became more aware of this through the series and just talking with my friends who are comics, were you surprised as you dug into this that there was such a vacant landscape for black comedy in 1990, like that? It's not like it's 1950. It's still, there's racism in the country, but I was surprised by that. What was your take on that?
Well, I mean, I got to LA in the 90s, and you know, LA is kind of an unusual place in that regard, in that, you know, whether it's black clubs, whether it's black restaurants, you know, sometimes it's hard for black businesses to sustain in this city. And I don't know all the socioeconomic reasons behind it, but it's just a frustrating and unfortunate circumstance that I see reoccurring in our town. Again, that's why I say kudos to Guy Tori for pulling it together. I mean, there have been attempts over the years. I mean, there was the point where Red Fox and Bill Cosby had a black comedy club in L.A. In the 60s, 70s. You know, so there have been attempts over time, but none of them as successful as Fat Tuesday.
And what, why, how did it take off so quickly? I mean, I mean, the people that were working there, and even at the I mean, and Cedric the Entertainer, and Bellamy, and Steve Harvey, it goes on and on and on, but it became Fat Tuesdays. How did, what happened? Like, was it just needed to exist and people flocked to it because it came about? Like, what kicked it off?
It needed to exist. There was this big explosion of amazing talent waiting for an opportunity. They were in the right place where they really could be seen by agents and managers. So you knew if you killed on Fat Tuesday, you could get booked on The Tonight Show. You could get a holding deal for a sitcom. You know, you could get a movie audition. So everybody's there. So all of a sudden, the Lakers start going there after the game. They were like, well, let's go to Fat Tuesday. Oh, all of a sudden, Prince is there. Mike Tyson's there. Tupac's there. Now, if you have that many celebrities, guess who else is going to come? All the beautiful ladies.
You're right.
So if you got all kind of celebrities, all kinds of beautiful people.
Yeah. You don't need Cherry Popper anymore. You got these other guys are drawing them now. You don't need Cherry Popper.
So it just became hot, period. Yeah. And, you know, so it's like there's every reason to go. You're going to have a good time. There's going to be a room packed full of celebrities. There's going to be good looking men and women. I mean, why wouldn't you want to be there?
Yeah. Yeah. And did, you know, it was funny because, Regina King, great actress, says in the piece, Fat Tuesdays, her quote was, Fat Tuesdays is similar to the Comedy Act Theater, but young. And I'm assuming young meant not just what was happening on stage, but the audience was a younger audience than the Comedy Act Theater.
Well, it just got cooler and cooler,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, because like Comedy Act was this combination of literally the neighborhood coming to see the comedy, plus, you know, some agents and managers coming, you know, coming down. But this became the scene. You know, it's one thing to have a club, it's another thing to be the hot club. When you're the hot club and the sexiest people are there, it's a different kind of energy. And that's a very hard thing to achieve. I don't care if you're a bar, if you know, you're a dance club or you're a comedy club. To be the hot club, it's a special thing, and that's what Fat Tuesday pulled off.
You're so right. The not in the context of black comedy and race, but the Comedy Cellar in New York's the same thing. Like there was a time when you know we'd worked there, and it was you know one of the clubs you worked in the city. You worked at Caroline's, you worked at the Comic Strip, and it was all the same group of us working the clubs. But then something happened, and the Cellar just kind of became like the place. That was the cool, really cool place to work and then really cool place to hang out. And then all of a sudden, like John Mayer is showing up. And then I remember going in one night and I had a set and I'm two people before me. I look at there's a TV monitor up in the bar that shows you the showroom downstairs. And John Mayer's on stage without a guitar. And I'm like, what the fuck is John Mayer doing on stage? And he's telling jokes and he was fucking killing. Like, it was like, come on, man, this is our gig. Can we just have this? Right. And and you're like, you got the guitar and the ladies. Like, I got what, you know. And it was, I know exactly what you mean. And you can't explain why that kind, I mean, you can with Fat Tuesdays, but like, there is a sort of a larger than any human being thing happening vibe in the universe that creates that sort of attraction, I think.
Yes, exactly. It's chemistry, right?
Yes.
All of a sudden, the elements come together, and it becomes, and there's a spark, and then there's a fire, and there's an explosion, and you know that's what happened, and that's why we wanted to do the series because we were like, look, we got to document because this was, you know, Guy Tori did everything right with no experience. He never run a business before. He didn't know what the heck he was doing.
He was a kid. He was like 24 from St. Louis. He just walked. He was like, it's unbelievable how big his balls are and his vision. His vision is amazing.
And, you know, and but I always say ignorance is a big part of success.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. Because if you talk to successful people, they'll always say the same thing. Man, if I knew how hard it was going to be, I never would have tried it.
Listen,
but they didn't know. They just went for it.
Yeah. I had a whole other career. I was on Wall Street. I was a lawyer and investment banker at these big firms, and it just wasn't doing it for me. And I met Jay Leno at a private function. I gave him some jokes. I thought he was going to throw them away. He bought them. He hired me to start sending jokes for the Tonight Show. And then I started doing stand-up. And then I left to go into stand-up and threw this whole career away and started my life over. And I don't know if I would be able to do it now because I was so like young and naive. Like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And then I'll get on the Tonight Show 10 times and then I'll get a TV show. And it's worked out great for me, whatever. But like, it's hard, you know, it's really, really hard when you don't know how hard something is, that's the best thing.
Exactly. But it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And it made it happen.
Do you tell people about, like, it wasn't just that it was about stand-up. Like, this created a whole sector of entertainment in terms of television and film, right? Because I would think before that, the white executives and casting people and development people weren't really developing a lot for the Black community. But this had to have a big impetus for that, right?
Yeah, well, what happens is, you know, people in Hollywood who, you know, I guess they mean well, they'll say, well, sure, we would hire somebody if we only knew who they were. I mean, so at the time, you know, there was, you know, the old school generation, right? There was the Bill Cosbys and folks like that. And there was the New Jacks, which was, you know, Eddie Murphy, Arsenio Hall, that crew. But they didn't know anybody else. So they go like, well, who else is there? And you go, dude, there's a million super talents out here. And you just got to do a little bit of work and find out all these great voices. So the night that the casting director for Fifth Element is there, right? And he's there, actually, she's there to see Guy Tori, right? Because like, maybe Guy Tori is the person for the role. And then Chris Tucker shows up and says, hey, man. I just let me get on. And Guy Tori, who is a generous guy looking at the big picture, says, sure, Chris, come on, you know, get on stage and kill it. He kills it. Boom. One of the stars of the Fifth Element.
Unbelievable. I love these stories. It's just like, did it eventually become too big, like in the sense of like it couldn't sustain? I mean, because like everything flames out on some level. Like, how does it play out?
Yeah, it's a couple of different things. One is Guy starts getting heat himself. So he's acting not just in comedy things. He's doing drama roles. Everyone's like, oh, God, Tori, you can act? What's going on? Right? So finally, his manager goes, hey, Guy, you're doing five things at once. You got to drop one. You should drop the one that makes the least amount of money, which, in fact, was Fat Tuesday.
Yeah.
Now, also at this time, Fat Tuesday was so successful, every comedy club was having a black night.
Yeah.
So there was Fat Tuesdays. There was Wild Night Wednesdays. Night of the week. At some club, not just in LA, but all over the country, even like in London and stuff, they started doing black comedy nights. So, you know, the barrier had been broken, the model had been made, and, you know, everyone was duplicating his formula. So he's like, look, I'm not the only one holding the door open now. Everyone's got a place to do their thing. Let me focus on me. I've been focusing on the community. Can I focus on me? And, you know, so that was really the transition.
Unbelievable. So listen, congratulations. Thank you as a comedian, as a fan of comedy, and just as a person that should know about this, the world should know. This is a great series. It's Fat Tuesdays. It's on Prime Video. It's out now. And real honor to have you on the show, man. And a big, big fan of your work.
Thank you, man. Thanks for your support.
Okay, that was Reginald Hudlin. Really, really excited that he made this docuseries. I think it's really important. Hope you guys enjoy it if you haven't seen it yet. Please tell your friends about the podcast. We want to keep building our fan base. Spread the word around. We got some great guests coming up in the next few weeks. I'm not going to tell you who. And appreciate you checking out the podcast. See you next week, everybody.